You are listening to New Game Plus, a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and they do this each and every week. For over 3 years now, the guys have played and reviewed almost 200 retro video games. But now, for the first time ever, New Game Plus presents a six-part miniseries called Press Start.
Welcome to New Game Plus. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name's Nolan.
And this is Press Start, Part 5.
You know we're official if we have an official miniseries.
Our first miniseries.
It's and true.
We are so official. Thanks to our patrons. We've been mentioning it on every episode, but it is because of our Patreons. Our patrons on Patreon. Hitting a goal, hitting a milestone, and because of that, we have created our first ever miniseries called Press Play. So far, it's what? Been so much fun.
Are it's you, definitely what? Called Press Start.
He's right.
And the reason, you know we're bona fide is not because we have a miniseries, but because we have t-shirts. So get your act together, Dustin.
Dustin's confused. You said Press Play. But it's fine. Same thing.
I said Press Play. Kenny's confused because Nolan said that we are official now. And Nolan's confused because
I don't know.
The first three episodes, we shared our histories. And these are histories just to when we were born and, you know, our brothers, sisters.
Day
we shared
day.
Our histories of video games. And for these final three episodes, we are sharing with you the most impactful influences on our lives as gamers. What games had the greatest impact on our lives? Nolan's episode was part 4, and it was amazing to hear his list of games. Part 5, this episode right here, is my most impactful video games of my entire life.
So if you want, just go ahead and skip this one. Jump to episode
6.
And
the next one. Because nobody wants to hear you.
You! Craig, that soldier boy.
What do you think his most influential games are?
The order in which that I'm going to be going with my games are the order of the video game's release, which I think coincides with around the time that I played it as well. And so that's just the order that I'm going to go in. The number one that I'm going to share with you, the first video game that was impactful, influential in my life, Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego?
What?
I know. I thought that one would be a shocker for you guys, and I don't know if it's just fresh on my mind because we just recently talked about the new show's release, but I've always known that I've liked the series. I even shared that on a recent episode. This game came out in 1989.
That's crazy.
I did not play it as a two-year-old, I don't think.
No?
You might have.
So it would have been a few years later, but it very likely might have been my first ever computer game and one of my earliest video games that I ever played.
I am stunned, sir. I had no idea.
This is the introduction?
It's not the introduction. I would have owned an NES at this time. And I would have probably casually been playing other video games like Super Mario Bros. Or Duck Hunt or whatever.
But you'd rather learn about history instead of have fun.
Yeah, edutainment games, that never was a bad thing to me. Like, I still like them if they're done well. They're just not done well the majority of the time.
That's fair.
So can you give me a brief snapshot of what this game is? I don't know.
Oh, dude. Oh, are you familiar with the Carmen Sandiego games?
I am, yeah.
So this one is you are an agent that is tracking Carmen Sandiego, and instead of going around the world or around the United States, she's going through
time.
Historical periods of our world. Of
that's
our
pretty
Earth.
Cool. Yeah.
And so it's a history game at the same time. You're learning different historical facts. You're going to different historical events and sightings, and you're looking for hints of where Carmen Sandiego went or what she stole role and different things like that. But just being able to, it was like kind of like my introduction to sci-fi, and it really got me into the mystery spy genre that I still like today. Not only in video games, but in literature and other things, television shows. I love the whole like spy mystery aesthetic, and a lot of that is attributed to Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego.
Now, you're a story guy, and you always have been.
I'm a story
guy.
What
better story than real history?
What better story than real history? Yeah. The whole idea of this, time travel's fun to begin with, right?
Yeah,
but
for
In this game, get
Kenny.
It,
come on.
In this game, I'm going to go back in time. And anyways, in this game... In this game, you use a chrono skimmer, and that is how you skim through time, and you've got a limit on how long you have to find Carmen Sandiego, that's a fun thing.
I'm going to say the timer on it was what made this game legit, I think.
Yeah, and so you go to different events or locations throughout history, ranging from 400 AD to the 1950s, and you find her henchmen and clues and hints of where she went next or what she stole, what she's doing, and so that's what you do. And you've got an interface, and you've got a home base for Acme, where you go up and down this elevator, just an iconic thing for me. You can. Once you think you know who the henchman is or what you're looking for, because it's not always Carmen Sandiego, I don't think, you actually like put in the different details. Is it a male or a female? What color hair is this person? What color eyes?
But
you
it get almost these... was kind of Clue-ish.
It's very Clue-ish, which I loved Clue, too. I ended up reading the Clue books from in large part because of Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. Watch the Clue movie because of Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. It's just this idea. One, again, I don't hate edutainment games if they're done well, and this early on, it helps me to learn historical things while at the same time being able to play a video game and travel through time.
Dude.
It just all works. And with the mystery spy genre, I don't know, there's a lot of things that just really worked here, and it's one of the most games that I'll have the most nostalgia for. If I like see a video or hear some of the sounds, it will bring me back to this earliest time when I was playing what I believe to be my first computer video game.
Dude, huh, Assassin's cool. Creed. It's Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed is
history,
where
time travel. Come on.
Oh, dude,
you're an
just
assassin.
Made a connection.
Boy. I
you
did.
Just made a connection.
Did you ever answer the question, where in time was she?
She changes on every playthrough, man.
Trifling.
It's hard. It's hard. Number two, no surprise to anyone that knows me or has listened to this podcast for any duration of time, Final Fantasy VII.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, we all knew this was on here. Probably you should have just talked about this game. Five different times and not even put anything else on there.
I've talked about it far too often, and I'm okay with that. Final Fantasy VII, everyone is familiar with the title to some degree. 1997 release for the PlayStation by Square, and you've heard me talk about it before. If you listened to my episode earlier in Press Start, not Press Play, Kenny, then you've heard the story of how this game entered my life and how I walked in on a middle school friend playing this game and how it kind of changed my understanding and perspective and relationship to and with video games. But this game for me is more than just a great game. It's more than just a fun game. It truly is an inspirational game for me. Like, yes, it made me fall more in love with gaming. Yes, it made me fall more in love with role-playing video games. Maybe even introduced me to it in a new light. But it also made me fall in love with storytelling. Mm. I think we've already mentioned... Yeah, Nolan, you already mentioned in this episode that storytelling is kind of like the element that I like most in video games. That's because of Final Fantasy VII. Before that, I'm sure there were video games that told stories, but none had come across my plate that had done it so exceptionally well. Final Fantasy VII was the first game that sucked me into a narrative and a world that was much more than a video game for me.
Don't take this the wrong way. How
I will.
Has... No, it's not an offensive question. How
any question that you start that way is probably going to be.
When you're talking about Final Fantasy VII, yes.
What do you think about the story now? Like, back then when you were younger, it was like the most captivating thing. Do you still feel the same, like, when you go back and play it now and as an adult? And, like, have played more story games?
I will answer this, but I will fairly say that I'm completely jaded when it comes to this game.
That's fair.
So I've got rose-colored glasses. I respect it even more now today than I did then.
No, I kind of agree with you, and I'm critical of it.
It's such a dense story, right? And some of it, sure, doesn't make sense, whatever. But you play it one time, you're going to miss so much of the story and actually what's happening. And if you don't play the prequel and these other games that eventually came out later, there's going to be different pieces that are missing. You're not going to know the fullness of some of the characters. Now that I've played the entire 7 compilation and many times and kind of read through actually like a written out pretty much book of the story itself, I'm more familiar with all of the details, all of the plot elements, and I just love it all the more. It's dense, it's crazy, it's ridiculous, but it's so awesome. Much fun and complete. Like, there's so much there. The story itself, like, that is a game. Just reading it. I would, in some of my college classes, I don't know if either of you guys knew this. There was at the time, and I think the website's been taken down. Maybe you can find an archived version. FF Compendium. There's a Final Fantasy Compendium online where they compiled, you know, like all of the summons from each of the Final Fantasy games, and there's different links. So you can go to the Final Fantasy 1 link, Final Fantasy 2, Final Fantasy 7 is what I would do. And then on most of those pages, you can click the story, and they have chronologically the story written out in sentence, you know, paragraph format, bullet pointed, and it took me days and days to read, but there's many times that I've gone through that again just to be reminded how great the story is. I know this is insane.
No, I love this.
I feel like when it finally comes out that you are to this day still writing Final Fantasy VII fan fiction, no one will be surprised.
So you're going to bring that up. So I think I've shared with you guys in my most intimate and fragile times in my life that at one point in my life, I was a part of a discussion board group that was online, and it was centered around Final Fantasy. It wasn't a fan site. It wasn't where we came together and like talked about how good the video games were, although there was probably like a place on that discussion board to do that. It was even a lot nerdier than that. Are you guys ready to be reminded? It was where we would come together and use the Final Fantasy realms and characters and like setups as a launching pad to create our own characters and our own stories. It was Final Fantasy that got me into this, that got me into writing like this kind of fantasy. Like
it's why you like D&D.
And it's like why I like writing. Like, I want to be an author sometime to some degree, you know, whether it's a side hustle or whatever. Yeah. And I'd like to write some fantasy-related things. That is because of Final Fantasy VII.
That's
like,
really cool.
Final Fantasy VII and those discussion boards. One of my dreams one day is to meet up with some of the guys that that I wrote with.
We wrote They're this. In jail.
They're hey, not in jail.
Would you cosplay FF7?
Listen, Rory and Kate were a great married couple. Actually, they were just dating and they lived together, but maybe they were going to get married. Anyways, if you're listening to this, please reach out to me, ngppodcast@gmail.com. There are some great writers there. We would write stories together. I don't want to explain it all out on the air. Most people that are listening to this is already turned off.
Give us your DeviantArt link. I know you have one.
There's no DeviantArt
There's
link.
There's fan art.
No. But Final Fantasy VII, great game, but it opened my mind to true fantasy worlds. And now fantasy, the genre, is my favorite kind of books, my favorite kind of media. And I want to, not only did Final Fantasy VII like push me deep into video games where I would never resurface, and I'm fine with that, but Final Fantasy VII pushed me into the realm of fantasy and writing, and a thing that I enjoy so much even today, and just like allowing my mind to explore like fantasy settings and characters and stories. All of this is due to Final Fantasy VII.
It's interesting how some of these games like have impact on us. Because though, again, this was Final Fantasy VII was a big one for me. And I was thinking about putting it on my list, though I knew you were going to talk about it, so I wasn't really planning to. if it made the list for me, it would never make the list because of the story that was told. It would 100% make the list for, like, game mechanics kind of reasons. But that's just because we're, like, totally different people. I'm the guy that's playing Final Fantasy VII and trying to, like, skip the cutscenes so that I can go screw around with materia and getting everything leveled up. And, like, got so much out of that. And so it's just funny to see the difference.
See, and I love the materia system. I love the chocobos. I love the moogles. I love Knights of the Round. I love all of those things. But I love those because they were tools to tell a great story with.
End of disc one.
Moving on to disc two now as we talk about my third most impactful game. And that is GoldenEye 007.
I was hoping someone would.
This is for the Nintendo 64. Came out also in 1997. 1997 was my year with Final Fantasy VII and GoldenEye. It came out by Rare. And the reason... There's two reasons why this was most impactful in my gaming career. The first was that this, I believe, was my first true multiplayer experience.
Wow. Yeah, that's important.
Out of any games. Like, sure, I played like two-player games before, right? Like, duh. But
yeah.
Most of those even are where you're switching off, not where you're competing against one another. GoldenEye 007, there's, I don't know about great story, but there's great different gameplay elements and a little bit of story there. But and I'll get into that because that's another part. But one of the main reasons why GoldenEye 007 was so impactful in my life was because I got to play it with other people. I sat down with two, three other people and were able to play, or a lot more than that, and just play tournament mode, or like where we would, you know, you lose one, you get out or whatever.
Yeah.
And play over and over again with friends, fake friends, enemies, whatever, there was there to play with me, and had so much fun going through these different stages, setting some different parameters. Like, I mean, it's even fun just going around and playing slaps where you have to slap each other.
Slap chops, dude, the best. DK mode.
So much fun. DK, big head, right? Paint mode. Like, all of these things. Golden gun, where one shot, right? Or even just the sticky mines, where you just put those around in the cave and wait till people come across and blow themselves up. Like, there's so, power weapons was one of my favorite settings. But there's so many different kind of modifications that you could do playing the game. Of course, it was all just, like, in-house. You had to have four controllers at the same Nintendo 64. But that was one of my first true multiplayer experiences. And I'm not a huge multiplayer game now, gamer now. Like, I played League of Legends with you. I played Overwatch, Rocket League, played a few other titles here and there, but I never got deep into that. But at least the first entrance into that was GoldenEye 007.
So I think this gets overlooked quite a bit, and it's relevant to us. We have played games that are based on movies and we hate them. GoldenEye is, but and we, I think we forget that, but were you a James Bond fan? Did you like the movie, or have you seen the movie?
Didn't they make the movie about the video game?
No.
Kenny's joke is not even really a joke. You type in, I did it today, you type in Google GoldenEye 007, you don't get the movie as the first few links. You get the video game.
Oh, of course. Yeah, because they knocked it out of the park where it's better than the movie, which I think is maybe the only instance. Did you like James Bond?
How rare is that? And no, Kenny, it's not a pun. Like, that's insane. I didn't know much of James Bond at the time. I still, after the fact, like in college, I remember, like, during the finals week, I was trying to watch all like 30 or 40 of original movies.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of a mistake.
They're bad, but whatever. I was watching.
Oh no, they're great. In bulk.
At the time, I didn't know. I knew James Bond was like a not a detective, but an agent, right? Shut up, Carmen Sandiego. James Bond in Search of Carmen Sandiego. Yeah. That's a show I'd watch. I knew of him, but I hadn't watched any of the movies. It was just the game. But I think the game was probably most people's, most gamers, or, you know, entrance into the James Bond series.
Oh, it was, yeah.
But not only was it my first multiplayer experience, the second thing, I said there were two things, was that 007 also helped feed my early obsession with 100%ing games.
Ooh. Really?
If you recall how the game is set up in kind of like its story mode, mm-hmm. you've got multiple difficulty levels, and I don't remember what they are or what order,
double
but it's
agent.
Like agent, double agent, double O, you know, it goes through those different layers. And with each of those, it was so cool because in the assignments or what the different objectives that you have to do for each stage change based on the difficulty level. Mm-hmm. And then completing all objectives within a certain amount of time on that difficulty level then would unlock the cheat codes. And the first few are easy, and then it opens up the page where you can see the cheat code, and then you see there's like a huge open space for all the rest of the cheat codes, or not cheat codes, but you know, cheats. And which just feeds my hunger. Like, I've got to fill up that page. And so I would go through and, dude, I would use those C buttons to run faster.
Mm-hmm. Strafe, baby.
You know, yeah, to be able to complete the stages more fastly. I would, I'm sure I had a guidebook at some point, or maybe it was the early stages of the internet for me, but I would definitely figure out how to complete those. And I never got it all, but it was my first like attempt and first thing that was really pushing me to try to beat these stages quickly and efficiently and clear out all the objectives. I was so familiar back in the day with these stages that I could probably play through a few of them, at least the damn stage. With
the first one.
My eyes closed.
Were you good at it? Because you sell yourself short, I think, when you talk about first-person shooters. You're always like, they're not my genre. And they're not, but I think you're good at them because I've played Halo with you. I've played Overwatch with you. And I think you're better than you think you are. Were you good at it?
I think I was better than I think I was, like, or than I was.
Right.
Like, looking back on it, I was like, dude, I was awesome. But... Yeah. I've tried to play GoldenEye recently with some friends, and I mean I didn't completely lose. Like, I would be able to hold my own a little bit against people that haven't played in much longer or never played, but I haven't won a 007 game in a long time. I imagine that I was pretty good, but I wasn't amazing. Number four, another one that might be a surprise to you.
Hit me.
Red Dead Redemption.
Huh. Actually, it's not.
I knew it was coming.
We just jumped from 97 to 2010. I don't know what I was doing during that
time. I feel like you guys both did big jumps.
I know. I don't know. I was trying
what
to think.
What happened to high school?
That's how it happened. I didn't go to high school.
I played in high school, but it was all the Final Fantasy. So after Final Fantasy VII, it was Final Fantasy VIII, IX, X, 12.
That's a lot of games.
It really was. It really was. And then at the earliest state, and then I went to college, and I didn't play much in college, like I mentioned, outside of like World of Warcraft, Halo 2. Those are pretty much the only games I played. Red Dead Redemption came out in 2010 by Rockstar, of course. But the reason why this is on my list, it's a great game, but it was the first video game that I played with my wife.
Aww.
And I mean, yes, awe, and not even sarcastically, all myself.
I'm not.
I probably played some games. I did play some games around my girlfriend, who became my wife. Guitar Hero 2. I probably played some Grand Theft Auto games. Some other games. I don't know. But this was the first game that I played with my wife. We had newly married, back from the honeymoon. I don't know, within a month or two. We decided to sit down and try to play this game together. Oh, she actually bought it for my birthday, maybe
sweet.
Right after we got married or right before we got married.
Yeah.
And we sat down and turned this game on and played all the way through it, not in one setting, not in one night, but just day after day, week after week, came back to this game. And it was this game that assured me that I had married the right person.
So awesome.
You weren't sure?
No. I was confident. I was confident before I put the ring on the finger, but it like assured me. I mean, it was just the above and beyond type thing.
Yeah,
my wife loves a nice dinner out or a romantic planned date, right? But she's also good with a night in as we play through a story heavy game together. And this was the first one that we played together, and we played all the way through. But since then, we have played dozens of games together. I usually, at any given time, have our New Game Plus game going, a game of my own, and then a game that her and I are playing together. If I'm able to balance all three of those, if not, we'll just have one with her and the New Game Plus game going. But since Red Dead Redemption, we have played all of the Assassin's Creed games together. We played all the BioShock games together. The new Tomb Raider series, we've been going through that, along with some great indie titles that have some good gameplay or good stories. So like Papers, Please, Brothers, Undertale, we've played these games together. And I love it because I love video games, and so I get to experience that. But then being able to experience it with the person that I love the most, you know, other than you two. No, I'm just kidding. That I love the most. And it's so much fun. She doesn't have a controller in hand typically, but she's helping to make the decisions. If there's like dialogue choices, she's helping to make those. And Red Dead Redemption, it's a beautiful game. It's an amazing game. It's great in its own right. We played through the whole story and then even played the DLC, which is some of the best DLC to date. Like, it's a full game on its own, the zombie mode, and it's scary. But playing that with my new wife by my side, there's very little that beats that.
Games are important to us, but when they intersect with life, especially, yeah. You know, Nolan talking about some of like friendships that were born out of and intersected games, and I feel like it's not surprising that some of the games that we remember most fondly are the ones that somehow stretch out from like just the screen to actually impact our day to day, and that's pretty cool.
Are cougars gonna coog?
Cougars are always gonna coog. That's the thing. We made a meme. Like my wife made me like get a graphic of a cougar in the video game and put "cougars gonna coog" on it, because if you played the game before, they come out of nowhere, they take you out, and they're very dangerous. But yeah, I mean, if a video game can develop a meme between a husband and a wife, I mean, what is video game?
We're levels deep now. Levels. I love it.
So my last one, number 5, is Child of Light.
Ooh. Now, that surprised me.
A 2014 game by Ubisoft. That surprises you?
Yeah, it did, yeah. But hit me.
Before this game, I understood, at least to some degree, that video games could be art.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, at least, it was Child of Light that cemented this fact in my mind. Child of Light was one of the first truly beautiful games I've ever played. There's been other beautiful games before this. I think even Limbo was a game before this, but that's kind of like beautiful in its own right, like in its own aesthetic.
Yeah,
It's like two colors, right? Like black, gray,
yeah,
type thing. But it's beautiful, right? But Child of Light was just something that was awe-inspiring to me. And we did a whole Elements episode on the sheer beauty of this game. You remember when we did that?
Yeah, I loved that episode. It was a lot of fun.
It was the first game that I ever completed and then immediately played again.
That's big for you. Yeah, that's really big for you.
We're called New Game Plus, but rarely do I play New Game Plus video games. Just because, like, when I experience it, me being a story guy, right? That, like, I've experienced it. The twists, right. The turns, the surprises, all of those things have happened. And so I'll play it again, but let it be a little while so that I can forget some things. But I remember beating this game and immediately pressing start again and playing that game over. And it wasn't the story that made me do that, and I love story. It wasn't even the characters, and the characters are great to me. It was because it was such an attractive game, like something so good to look at. The watercolor kind of motif that they went with,
so pretty.
The colors, the contrast, all of those things were just so compelling to me that it captured my attention, and it forced me to play this game again right away.
I knew you liked this game. I didn't know you liked it big enough to like call it out as one of a handful of games that, you know, had some kind of notable effect on you. And so that's really cool.
It's one of the video games, if not the video game, that I probably think of most when I'm just like reflecting back or thinking back over video games, outside of Final Fantasy VII, of course. I think Child of Light is one of the most, is one of the games that have left an impression on me most in recent years. And that's why it's here. Like in the last decade, right around there, maybe a little bit less, because Red Dead Redemption would make that as well. Child of Light, in one of the more recent times, has left just an indelible impression on my heart. I fell in love with this game, and since then I fell in love with like the beautiful game genre. I know it's not a genre, I just created it, but
it is now.
I've thoroughly enjoyed titles like Ori and the Blind Forest and Hollow Knight. Both of those mm-hmm. are just this, and very similar, different art styles, but just these games that you can play and just stare at and be enraptured by the beauty. Child of Light it was the first one that did this for me.
Did you ever look at any other games up until that point and felt like it was an art form, like you would have used that word, or was this the moment where like you started viewing video games in that way? Because people always tell us that, oh, I mean, our parents mostly, that video games aren't serious, can't be a career, but we're in a different age now.
This was the first one, and I'm kind of embarrassed by that because I should have noticed this earlier. Like, I feel like you, Nolan, probably had a respect for that at an earlier time. Mm-hmm. I looked at games and I was like, this looks good, or this is awesome. But even Red Dead Redemption, which was a beautiful game,
yeah,
and created some beautiful scenes, it didn't capture me as like an art form yet. It was still, the things that shined brightest in games like that was the story and the characters,
yeah,
for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Child of Light, story and characters great and all, but for me, obviously, the thing that was way over the top was this Child of Light thing. And so, I don't know, there's just something so peaceful about having a game that, yeah, there's action, and yeah, there's, you got to do quick trigger every once in a while, and yeah, you've got to be smart about how you build up your character, whatever. But it's just a joy to play because of how just pretty it is. And I know that's crazy. I know that's weird for a lot of people to hear.
It ain't weird.
Because most people aren't playing video games for the beauty aesthetic. And I typically don't. But after playing Child of Light, there's something that is nice every once in a while to go to a game that I don't have to fret about, or I don't have to strategize about over the top, that I can just play and enjoy the art of it.
Hats off to Ubisoft Montreal.
I'm kind of surprised that you're not more hyped for VR.
I don't know why.
VR is bonk.
I've always been against it. I tried it. Did I try it with you, Kenny, on your bachelor party?
Yes,
oh, yeah.
You did.
I wasn't there, but you told me.
And about. Was surprised, pleasantly surprised. But I still think it's
a gimmick.
Oh.
Well, I think eventually maybe it can, but I still think it's far out, too far away for me to care enough right now. And I'm not going to buy a thing and stick it on my head yet. I will eventually.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I will eventually. I'll do all of that when we go that direction. I still think it's too early to get too excited about that stuff.
Those are all fair things. But for a moment, I want you to picture the technology being there and being mature, and then some really, really good immersive music, sound, art, video
ASMR.
Games existing. Can you imagine being in the world of Child of Light?
I can't. I really can't. And I hear what you're saying, but for some reason it's a disconnect in my mind thinking that my brain's going to know that I'm not there. And like, if I'm doing VR, like, I want to believe that I am there. I
right,
want
you
to,
want the whole thing. You want it like
Oasis.
Well, I think even if they can do
feedback.
It, even if they can do it with sound and visual, I just, for me, I'm a skeptic, and I feel like I'm always going to know, like, my couch is right here. I better be careful, or like, you know.
I think it's going to get there, and I think it's going to be cool. So as a guy who hasn't done a lot with VR and doesn't generally care to, it's when you talk about the like art kinds of things that get you hyped that just make me think that like even more of that could be really cool.
Can I add one more here just at the end? And it's not a full discussion one, but I did put it in my notes. Kenny, I think you mentioned it in part four as a joke or whatever, but I actually put it here just to say it at the end of mine. And it is Earthworm Jim.
What?
It's the first game we played together on this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's why I dropped it. It's because it was significant, but just for a different reason.
Not back in the day. That's not the reason why I would include it here, although I had fond memories of it. But it was the very first game we ever played together on this podcast.
Yep.
I actually submitted it thinking that it would be a good, like, we didn't randomize for it. We didn't have an episode zero. It was episode one. We picked Earthworm Jim. For some reason, I thought it would be a good one to start on just because it was a retro game I remember playing back in the day.
And we were like, yeah, sure.
It wasn't a good decision, but also we didn't know what we were talking about and didn't know how to talk about things. But it was it's a terrible episode. I wouldn't encourage anyone to go listen to it.
I got to go listen to it.
We played Earthworm Jim and started this podcast, and here we are 160-something, 170 episodes later, and we're still playing games. So Earthworm Jim, if nothing else, helped start what is now New Game Plus.
It deserves mentioning for sure.
So thank you for listening to me as I shared my list of most influential, inspirational video games in my life in our fifth episode of Press Start. Tune in for the final episode as we hear Kenny's list of most impactful games in his life.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be the best conclusion to any media
series
conclusion
ever.
That you've ever.
Dang.
I got a twist bigger than Shyamalan.
It's Shyamalama Ding Dong, and it's better than the Breaking Bad finale in which... Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this has been New Game Plus.